You're listening to Your Happy Place podcast. Each week, we will be bringing you interviews with real estate experts and investors. The show features interviews and discussions on real estate investing, property management, and inspiration. With your host, Jenna Ross.
So today on the podcast, I'm pleased to have Marcel Dupuppe here with me. He is a private banker with RBC Wealth Management Private Banking. Welcome to the podcast, Marcel.
Thank you so much, Jenna, for having me. It's an honor to be here and talk to you today.
So how did you get started into private banking?
Well, I have a long history with the bank. My boyhood dream was to actually be a CFA team pilot. And I was an air cadet for many years. And so my goal was to get into the military and fly jets, essentially. And long story short, but I wasn't able to get into the Royal Military College because of my eyesight at the time. I didn't have 20/20 vision at the time, a customer service representative or teller. And I just immediately enjoyed the experience of helping people and helping them manage their money. And I was studying at St. Mary's University, doing my business degree at the time. And upon graduation, I had kind of gotten to know people at the bank better. And I was mutual funds licensed at that point. And that led to my very first mutual fund sales role. And from there, I gradually progressed up the ranks, if you will. I was in leadership roles for about 8 years, both in Halifax and Toronto. And I became a banker in Toronto initially about 4 years ago. And that kind of solidified my belief that I wanted to work with high net worth individuals. I wanted to work in wealth management. And I'm passionate about people and business owners in particular. And so the role kind of included everything I had ever dreamed of wanting to do in this industry.
That's really interesting, especially about the jet pilot. That's quite a shift. But
I think I might have watched Top Gun too many times. I'm not sure, but I still love aviation. And but this is what I do.
That's awesome. And who is your ideal client to work with?
Well, I'm just thinking about my desk and the people that I work with, and approximately 80% of them are business owners, they're entrepreneurs, and their top line revenue is anywhere from $3 million and well north. And it really varies across different business sectors. So it includes, but it's not limited to, folks who run technology businesses, people that are in manufacturing, in healthcare, in real estate, in professional services such as legal and accounting. And the remaining 20% are corporate executives, they're wealthy families, they are sports professionals. So there's a nice variety there, but the bulk of my business is the entrepreneur.
That's so interesting. Yeah. Is there, I think you just covered that about the threshold or point that a client runs into where private banking is an obvious solution.
It's funny because I feel like the existence of private banking isn't really known to many people, and we don't generally advertise, our services since it's such a niche offering. But thankfully, we have a very collaborative culture at RBC, and we as private bankers often get in front of people we can potentially assist through introductions by commercial and small business bankers and retail bankers and investment advisors through our full service brokerage channel, for example. And introductions from existing clients is always the highest compliment, and I've been fortunate to receive those as well. So I'll just tell you a funny story. I was introduced recently to a woman who is a very successful corporate executive here in Halifax. And when we first met, she told me up front, look, I'm not complex and I likely don't need private banking, but she was willing to listen to me and what I had to say. And as we began talking, I find out that she's 3 years from retirement and really had no financial plan. I find out that she was in the process of building her forever home and she needed a construction mortgage. She hadn't updated her will or her power of attorney in over 10 years, and she's accumulated significant wealth in that time. She has investment properties. She has a few business startups that she's invested in. So by the time I gathered all this information, I also found out that she has her business spread over three banks, and none of it was managed by a relationship manager who really understood her and her husband holistically. So as soon as I was through with that session, I outlined what myself and my team can do to help her. And I mean, she signed on the spot. It was just a natural fit for her and her family. So I think people reach a stage in life where they feel their finances are growing in complexity because of multiple factors. It could be their business is scaling, they're traveling internationally, although maybe not so much right now. They're growing their family, they have sudden wealth, and suddenly their organizational chart looks a lot more complex. Maybe because they own assets within a holding company, or they have just established a family trust, or they have multiple income properties, and they need someone who understands all those assets and how they're interconnected from both an assets and a liabilities perspective, and just help them make good decisions, such as when and why to use leverage, or the importance of liquidity or currency considerations. So sorry, that's a long-winded answer to a short question, but it hopefully it answers a little bit about thresholds and really it's about what are the needs and how can I help?
Yeah, no, that's so interesting because I think for Greg and myself, when we were referred to private banking, we were just so frustrated because of our complexity with our corporations and how they all speak to each other. And just it's difficult for everyday bankers to wrap their heads around what we're doing because it is complex. So that's definitely an area that was of benefit for us, is just to, you know, have everything at one place and just provide value around that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how can you get into in a little bit more detail around how private banking is able to help clients with their needs?
Yeah, I always speak about private banking in three buckets when I meet somebody for the first time. And this is reinforced throughout the course of our relationship. And the first bucket is wealth management. And I want to emphasize, I'm not a one-man show in the sense that I work with a team of professionals to get the job done. So for example, for clients who require complex financial planning, I work collaboratively with somebody called Mary Eisner, who's brilliant. She's a chartered professional accountant, in addition to being a certified financial planner. And Mary and I will have deep discovery sessions with high net worth clients and essentially create a financial blueprint to provide them with a really clear illustration of their wealth and their income and how to grow it, as well as how to de-accumulate it in the most tax-efficient manner possible. I also provide advice on will and estate planning, and I work with our will and estate lawyer, Christy Sandals, to help clients understand the legal implications of their existing structures and provide advice about ways in which their wills and power of attorneys can be updated, just in order to better protect the integrity of their hard-earned assets and their businesses in the event of a death or a disability. So that's just the first bucket with regards to wealth management. I could go on about that, but the second bucket is access to lending. And this is a point of differentiation for us as private bankers. Because whenever possible, I mean, I like to build relationships with our clients' existing accounting team, because oftentimes there are ways, not in all cases, but in many, to structure credit that enables clients to deduct interest costs with these credit facilities. So often clients come to me and ask for personal credit in order to have access to capital to purchase an investment property, for example, or to provide a capital injection into a business, or to buy insurance or individual securities. I'll just tell you a quick story, Jenna. A client, I mean, let's call her Susan, operates a business and holds an investment portfolio with our full service brokerage, which at RBC is called RBC Dominion Securities. When she was presented with an opportunity to invest in a new business venture with a very defined investment horizon, her investment advisor introduced me to her to understand her needs and the details of the deal. So to meet Susan's liquidity needs, myself and my team, we established a revolving credit facility at a very competitive interest rate and actually used her Dominion Securities investment portfolio as collateral. Susan was then able to, you know, secure the cash that she needed for the new business venture without having to remove funds from her investment portfolio. And she avoided a ton of immediate taxes on the capital gain. So that's just one example of how access to lending in our world is maybe different from other credit structures. And the last bucket, the third bucket I'll talk about, is just professional banking management. I always tell people, I can't control interest rates and I cannot control which direction the stock market is heading. But what I can control is the service I provide to people. I can control my communication with clients. And that's never really been more important than the times that we're living in today. In my view, you know, relationships matter and building trust with people is essential to success. And when clients call me to solve a banking problem, I do it with a sense of urgency because private banking has a license to receive banking instructions by phone and email, and I can execute on their transactional needs without obligating them to stand in line or call a 1-800 number. And this is really important now where public health measures have been introduced and limits people's movement around the city and going into different buildings to keep people safe. And so if I can do a comparable job remotely and the job gets done, that's what matters to private banking clients whose time is better spent managing their businesses than standing in line or being in a 1-800 queue. Their expectations are different and our service model is different to reflect their needs.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Great stories and great examples of how you can work together and provide value for people to save on capital gains and just kind of looking at everything in one package. And certainly we kind of came into private banking right, I guess, before the pandemic. So it was very helpful for us because, of course, I was buying out my vehicle right in the middle of it, and you guys were able to help facilitate that. So that was really cool and very valuable.
Well, thank you. Happy to help.
So what has it been like for you and your team to manage clients through the pandemic?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's a mixed bag, to be honest, Jenna. I will say that despite all the challenges, as I said before, the importance of good relationships and clear and concise communication and I guess a mutual understanding of where somebody else is at, that's what's kind of gotten me up in the morning and gives me meaning and purpose in terms of what I do. I love to help people. And so when I hear things, and I have heard these things, like I'm having challenges paying my staff from a business owner in the early days of the pandemic, and the government was just coming out with the relief programs that, you know, people had trouble navigating, I was there with them having the conversations, sharing screens remotely, kind of figuring it out and being a point of contact for them. And so that was a real pride point, you know, just to be able to interpret all the information coming at them from my lens and then together figuring out how that fit in the broadest scheme of things when it comes to their businesses. There's also been the complete opposite. There's also been instances where people have come to me and they want to be aggressive with their plans to invest during the pandemic. And they saw valuations at attractive levels and they saw opportunity and they wanted to capitalize on that opportunity. So two very different conversations. And it's unlike anything I've seen in my 20 years in banking. And it's definitely reminded me of what a privileged position that I'm in to really empathize with people and just understand their motivations and their hardships and do the best that I can with the resources that I have at my disposal. And I gave a couple of examples earlier just to try to make things better for people, you know. And when I think about how the bank has responded to the pandemic as a whole, I mean, as I mentioned, I've been around for 20 years. And so I have some perspective on this, but, you know, we've connected with clients unlike I've ever seen. And I mean, we've supported hundreds of thousands of clients globally through things like payment deferral programs. And our leadership team really knows that small actions can make a big difference in our communities and our charitable partners. And, you know, each of us was given $25 to direct to a cause that matters to us. So that's, you know, $2 million impact when you think about all of our employees globally. So I think it's the little things and maybe the bigger things that all add up to just doing the best we've done under the circumstances.
Yeah, I agree. From communication and webinars and resources, I feel like the private banking team and RBC as a whole has done a really great job in getting funding out for the government programs and everything as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the general sentiment amongst your clients?
Yeah, it's another good question. And I think it's changing all the time. I sort of alluded to it earlier. You know, you have people who just are wanting to keep their heads above water. And there's some people who have real concerns when these government relief programs run out, what their business is going to look like in the fall, you know? And I think we're going to be in for a bit of a tough fall. And that messaging comes straight from our leadership teams, you know, just be prepared. And you know, I don't know what to expect, but I'm going to use the same principles that I've talked about earlier in terms of leading with empathy and really listening and understanding what the challenges are and providing solutions where possible, you know. And so there's a sentiment out there that people are cautious, and in the new reality, once these relief programs run their course. And there's also a great sense of optimism, and, you know, people really, you know, children are back in school, people's days have shifted, and they're better able now in many cases to be able to focus more directly on their businesses and, you know, unearth opportunity and have that growth mindset. And so I'm also coming across that too, and that's encouraging. So again, it's a bit of a mixed bag, and time will tell.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think probably, you know, like normal individuals going through this, it's just a multitude of, it's like a roller coaster ride, and we don't know what's around the corner. Like, thankfully, the real estate market has been amazing. But yeah, I certainly am a little leery of what is around the corner with, you know, some of the government programs ending and people, you know, relying on them for what it means to my business. And we just don't know if there's going to be a second wave. So it is interesting.
Totally.
But I was happy to see school start. The kids really needed that. So I think that's good. And hopefully they can stay open in some capacity.
Totally. Yeah. I drop my kids off. Well, my kids are in the CSAP program and they get bused. And my 9-year-old daughter was super excited and came home ready to, couldn't wait for the next day. And my son was the opposite. It's just, he had a 6-month March break in his view. So why not keep it going? So I think we're all adjusting depending on our family circumstances, but I'm not missing all the constant interruptions. Past few months.
Yeah, it's hard. It's been really challenging because I think it's, you know, a lot of nice family time, but it's difficult to keep things going when you have children around when normally they would be in school. And I know our girls definitely came home excited for today. So yeah.
That's good. Let's keep that going. I respect teachers today more than ever.
I know, me too. Absolutely. Yes, I have a new respect for them. I just totally can't what they're dealing with right now. It's got to be so, so tough.
So, totally.
Are there some financial strategies, like knowing that we don't know what's around the corner, but that you think might be helpful for individuals to implement in this current climate?
Yeah, it's another really good question. And obviously, everything depends on an individual's circumstance. But what I will say is a strategy that I have seen work successfully, not just during the pandemic, but over time, is what's called a spousal loan strategy. So if I can give you an example, Jenna, if a higher income spouse has, let's say, a $300,000 non-registered lump sum, and they could essentially loan a lower income spouse that lump sum and charge the Canada Revenue Agency a prescribed rate of interest. So the CRA prescribed rate of interest is currently 1%. So what would happen is the lower income spouse could then invest that $300,000 and pay the higher income spouse $3,000 per year, no later than January 31st. And I always tell people, you know, do this by a check and therefore you have a paper trail. So then the lower income spouse can then deduct the $3,000 as a deductible carrying cost because the loan was used for investment purposes. And the higher income spouse takes the $3,000 as taxable income, but avoids paying taxes on the distributions as a result of the strategy, which saves the household in overall tax expenditure. So I always tell people it's better to have a tax problem than an income problem. So, you know, we have to think wisely about these things and whether or not it makes sense in the family structure. Another strategy is the establishment of what we call an alter ego trust. So if you're 65 years of age or older, and the trust is established after 1999, you can move certain assets to what we call an alter ego trust to reduce probate taxes, as they're not applicable for assets held outside of an estate. So if you own property, if you're able to grant your executor rights to administer the asset without obtaining probate, this can save time for sure. It can also provide estate litigation protection and other benefits. So that's just another example of things that may make sense for people's situations today.
Oh, wow. Those are two things that I'm not familiar with. So I'm just taking notes here. And yeah, that's an interesting concept for sure. And do you have a favorite finance book to recommend?
Ooh, I've read many over the years. I'll try to keep the academic things sort of aside, but there's a book that always resonated with me. And I always think about, and it's called Your Retirement Income Blueprint. And it's written by a man called Daryl Diamond. And it's just great perspective on concepts that we use in our industry as financial planners all the time. One of the things that he says that I talk about with clients all the time, especially as it relates to investment management fees, and I emphasize that, listen, they're a minor issue compared to what people pay needlessly in taxes if you don't plan properly. So let's park the fee discussion and let's actually talk about planning in the form of cash flow planning to reduce your overall income tax obligations. So yeah, and then he goes into some really useful, relevant concepts that still apply today. The book was not written yesterday, but and there's been a couple of different editions and updates and all of that, but it's an excellent book.
That sounds like a great book. And I think you're bang on about just thinking about planning your money and saving on what you pay in taxes would be huge. So yes, it wouldn't matter what you pay for fees if you're saving money in big chunks other places. So
you got it.
Yeah. And where is your happy place?
Oh, I'm going to say off the top of my head, it's this town in southwestern Germany called Heidelberg. It's got this really amazing castle on the side of this mountain. And there's just some amazing hikes you can do around the grounds of the castle and just the mountain itself. And it's also the place where I proposed to my wife over 13 years ago. And we go back there as often as we can just to, I don't know, kind of reminisce about that time and just sit and marvel about how being in nature is awesome. So yeah, I would say Heidelberg for sure.
Oh, that sounds incredible. Yeah, it sounds beautiful. I can just picture it. Wow. And I bet it is. There's really good beer there.
Oh, they invented it. So I'm biased, but I think the way the Germans do that is awesome.
That's amazing. And do you have an email address that you can leave with our listeners?
I do. Thank you for asking. So it's my first name, Marcel dot, and my last name, Dupupet at rbc.com. And they can also find me on LinkedIn. And I'm also on Twitter at RBC, capital M, capital D, Upupet.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Marcel.
Jenna, it was a real pleasure. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to Your Happy Place podcast. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review so that we can get our podcast out to more listeners. If you would like to contact us, please send an email to podcast@happyplacepm.com.